hope that the first thing you noticed when you walked into church today were these beautiful banners that are before you. Anyone notice the banners? I hope you noticed the banners. We even have the team that put them together. We call these our miracle banners. We have Carol Rice and Nancy Densmore, who are right here, who helped do all the sewing and the putting together. And then I see Diane McGrath is in the back, because she was part of the design of these banners as well. So these have been worked on and dreamed of for many months. Now, how many of you remember those severe rains we had this summer that caused many, many, many basements to flood around Severna Park and Millersville? Anybody remember? Oh, yeah. We all sort of went through that. Now, Nancy was one of those basements that her basement flooded, and it didn't just flood a little bit. How high did the water come up? 50 inches. Now, do you know what was in her basement at the time? These banners were all on her quilting table downstairs. And what happened to the banners?
Nothing.
Thankfully, nothing. They were just above the waterline, right? And just, they floated. They were on the tabletop that floated up. It floated up. So these are our miracle banners. And we are so grateful that they were unscathed and that now we get to enjoy them, not just through this series. They'll be part of the sort of our visual for the six-week series of do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. So we're going to be looking at that. But we will have these banners for a long time to come. So thank you. Can we thank those who put these together? And we're glad that they survived the great flood of Severna Park as well. So let's talk about Micah a little bit. If we're going to be in Micah 6... For 6 weeks, we need to know a little bit about Micah. Micah, how many of you are named Michael? Anybody Michael in this crowd? No Michaels? We had a bunch of Michaels at 9:30 and a couple at 8 o'clock as well. So if you are a Michael, you are a namesake to Micah, and Micah literally means, who is like the Lord? Who is like the Lord? That's what that name means. So if you bear that name or have somebody in your family that bears that name, that's sort of the call that you carry around with you. Who is like the Lord? Now, Micah was a prophet from not the big city, but from the country, and from a little place called Moreshet. And it was one of the 46 towns and villages that were wiped out by Sennacherib as he was making his way to try to take down Jerusalem and sort of take over that whole area. And so Micah and his family were forced to flee to Jerusalem. And it's like, you know, if you were living in the suburbs of D.C. and got wiped out, you had to go into the big city, right? And Micah, the prophet, comes in and looks around at the leadership and looks around at both the religious and the political leaders of the time, and he has a word for them. He has a word for them about why God's judgment is being visited upon the nations, maybe why their town had been wiped out, and what he feels compelled to say on behalf of God. In the tradition of all the great prophets, he speaks truth to power. Right there in the seat of power, when the political leaders and the religious leaders have all gathered, this little country bumpkin comes in and has a powerful message for them. And these words that have continued to ring. Now, Micah as a book is not very long. It's 7 chapters long. It's just a very short little, we don't call him a major prophet like Isaiah or Ezekiel. He is a minor prophet. And yet his words echo. And some of those texts are still with us today. In chapter 3, you see, he sort of launches in right away in chapter 1. But by the time we get to chapter 3, we have sort of a summary about what's going on. What is he so upset about? Listen, you heads of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel, should you not know justice of anybody? Should you in leadership not know what God's justice looks like? But no, you who hate the good and love the evil, who tear the skin off my people and the flesh off their bones. That's very graphic language. The prophets are over the top with their imagery and their metaphors, aren't they? And then later on in chapter 3, hear this, you rulers of the house of Jacob and chiefs of the house of Israel, who abhor justice. His diagnosis is that they have forgotten about God's justice and they pervert all equity. Who build Zion with blood and Jerusalem with wrong? Its rulers give judgment for a bribe. Its priests teach for a price. Its prophets give oracles for money. Which is to say, money buying power is as old as Micah and way back before that. It's not just a contemporary issue, is it? Where those who have the most can influence the most. That's one of the things that he's accusing the leadership of Israel. You've given in. You've been allowed your vote to be bought, so to speak. You've allowed your voice to be bought. You've allowed influence to be bought. Pretty scathing stuff. One of the commentators I was reading this week says that Micah doesn't shy away from denunciation. He is bold in his denunciation about what's wrong with the people. But he is bolder still with his hope. Don't you like that? He's bold to speak out, but he also is bold with hope. And if you don't believe me, look at these texts. Micah 4:3. How many of you have heard this? This is the vision, God's vision that he holds before them about a different kind of world that is possible. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Have you heard those words? They still ring across the centuries, don't they? Or when we get to December and Advent, we turn to the prophet Micah, this little prophet Micah, and we read these words. But you, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin... Come up to chapter 6, and now we are getting to the heart of things, right? He's been building this argument, and in chapter 6, we find ourselves sort of in a courtroom. That's the scene, right? This, and God is calling the people to account. God is the one, let's see, are we in here? No, we're not. Paul had said he had fixed some things, but I'm going to have to read it for you. Sorry. Maybe it reverted back to an old. So in the beginning of chapter 6, before we get up to this kind of climax in verse 8, hear what the Lord says. Rise, plead your case before the mountains, and let the hills hear your voice. Hear, you mountains, the controversy of the Lord, and you enduring foundations of the earth. For the Lord has a controversy with his people, and he will contend with Israel. God is calling the people to account. God is the one that's bringing the action, so to speak, into the courtroom. And the first witness that God calls upon is who? Creation, right? The mountains, the foundations of the earth. God calls out to all creation because God's creation calls out to us about God's love and mercy and justice. And then God goes on, "Oh, my people, what have I done to you? In what have I wearied you? Answer me, for I brought you up from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery, and I sent before you Moses and Aaron and Miriam." So the next witness, if you will, in the case is their salvation history, right? God's faithfulness to them through the generations, God's redeeming of them out of slavery and bringing them into the promised land. So first God calls on creation, then God calls on their history. Don't you remember who you are? Don't you remember our covenant that we have together? And then the next thing to come into the courtroom is their worship, their cultic practices, right? With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? That was proper practice, right? You bring the sacrifice to atone for your sin. Is that going to be enough? But they know that the deck is stacked against them. They know that they are in big trouble, so they up the ante. Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams? With 10,000s of rivers of oil, shall I give my firstborn for the sin of my soul, my transgressions, for the fruit of my body, for the sin of my soul? And so now we're coming to this great climax, and that's when we get right here. He has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? Come on, you know this. Say it with me. But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. So I want to spend time today, since we're going to be spending 6 weeks in this text and related texts, talking about two words in particular today. Whoops, I'm a little too... Require, darash, and justice, Mishpat. Okay, Darash and Mishpat. Now, the word in Hebrew, Darash, has multiple meanings, but what does the Lord require of you? Require, I don't think fully captures it. Require, that same word is used to talk about seeking in prayer, asking in worship, diligently inquiring. It's about a yearning, and it's about desire. It's the same word that gets used in some of the poetic language about desiring another person as a lover. And so it's that, what do I, like when you say, when you're in love and you say, I need this person, right? And it's a relational term. It's about what does God need from us? What does God yearn for in us? What does God desire for us? Not just a burden that God casts upon us. When the Lord requires justice, kindness, and mercy, it isn't that the Lord insists on or demands these things. God seeks them, yearns for them, and frankly needs them for us as intimate partners. God is longing to have partners in the world who will do God's justice and who will love God's kindness and who will walk humbly with God. It's not an obligation as much as it's an invitation to be partners with God. It's an invitation. Now, the other word, mishpat. Mishpat is, at its base, judgment or justice or regulation. It gets used that way, but it's a word that is used over and over throughout the Old Testament. More than 200 references to this word or this word in its some form. And when God's justice is spoken of in the Old Testament, what gets linked to it almost every single time? Anyone know? God's justice means looking out for who in the society. It's always relational. It's not just judicial. It's not just some clinical form of justice. God's justice is always described in very relational terms. When we are doing God's justice, we are looking out for the widows, the orphan, the alien, the sojourner. Again and again, those are the terms that come up next to God's justice all throughout, whether you're looking at Leviticus and Deuteronomy or whether you're talking about the prophets. Again and again, they say God's justice is being worked out when everybody is being cared for, especially the most vulnerable. That's what God's justice looks like, everybody being cared for. Mishpat justice is ensuring everyone has what they need. The just society is the one that lifts up the neediest. Or another way of putting it, God's inviting us to be sharers, to be co-builders in this kind of kingdom with God. It's hard work. It's robust work. It requires something of us. But we're invited. God yearns, darash, God yearns for us to be part of this work with God in the world. We have symbols of this, not just in the church, don't we? I was talking about this great symbol of imagining a Micah down in Washington, D.C. If you go down to Washington, D.C., and you go to the Martin Luther King Memorial, you will see, quoted, until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Now, they attribute that to King, but where does King get it from? The Bible. And not from Micah, he gets it from Amos. Let justice roll down like rivers, right? And it's not just within our own tradition that we have these words. Mahatma Gandhi, that great spiritual leader, the 20th century, he said, the measure of the greatness of a nation is not its wealth or its power or its global standing. The measure of the greatness of a nation is how well it cares for the most vulnerable, how well it cares for the most weak, those on the outskirts. The Supreme Court's been in the news this week. I don't know, just for some reason or other. But if you go down to the Supreme Court itself, and what do you see inscribed on the very building before you go under those giant columns? It doesn't say equal justice for just the powerful, or equal justice for the rich, or equal justice for those who can afford it, or equal justice for this group or that group. It says equal justice for who? For all. Equal justice for all. So the power of a prophet is always about using the language of the, like in Martin Luther King's case, of using the country's own professed ideals to say, are we living up to them? That's what Micah is doing to the people of Israel. Are we living into this vision that God has given us? You know what is good. God has told us what is good. And here's what you do. You do justice. You love kindness. kindness or mercy or chesed. You'll hear more about that in a couple weeks. And you walk humbly with God. There's a story in the news this week that brought this home for me in a very down-to-earth kind of way. Two college kids out in California, Jev and his friend Christian, Asian Americans, they go to school out there, and so the only place they can afford to eat is McDonald's. And they noticed in even this nice new upscale McDonald's, you know, a lot of McDonald's are getting a little nicer. They're getting a facelift, a lot of them, turning kind of trendy and nice, and had beautiful artwork on the walls and nice new painting and stuff. And they looked around, and they noticed there weren't any Asians on the walls. There were plenty of people of pictures, or plenty of pictures of people on the walls, but no one that looked like them. So they decided to do something about it. They made their own poster. And they made it look pretty good and official. And so they took a picture of themselves. They were holding the McDonald's stuff, the fries, the burger. They got the little McDonald's logo. They put it in the corner. They went to Office Depot. They blew it up to poster size. And there was a blank wall in the McDonald's. And they walked in and they just put it on the wall. And it's been up there for over 8 weeks now. I love that because, and he said, we weren't trying to make this big protest or anything like that. He said, this is all we were trying to do. Remember, folks, all races deserve recognition, and I guess I did my part. What I love about that story is they were just trying to say, all we want to do is to be in the picture. And I think when we get down to God's justice, it's as simple as that. It's about making sure that everybody is in the picture, that everybody is treated fairly, that everyone is included. We talk about a table where everyone is welcome. All God's children. And to live God's justice is hard work because the world works against that. The world works to make sure that the privileged and the few and the influential call the shots. And the people on the edges, they need advocates and they need voices and they need other people to stand beside them and make sure they get included too. People like you and people like me. Maybe people like us who always appear in the posters. We need to speak out most of all. William Faulkner said, never be afraid to raise your voice for honesty and truth and compassion against injustice and lying and greed. If people all over the world would do this, it would change the earth. If we would just speak up, if we would just stand in solidarity with, if we would just reach out. And I don't know how that's going to come for you this week. But I do know that the first part of Micah's charge to us doesn't just say to love justice. And it doesn't just say to know about God's justice. It says to do God's justice. And whether that means building a new relationship, or speaking out, or putting yourself in an uncomfortable situation, or maybe educating yourself about different realities, I don't know what that looks like for you. But for all of us, we are called to this work. This important work, this thing that is good, God's vision for who we are supposed to be. To do justly, or to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. That's the work I want to be about. That's the work I hope our church continues to be about, as we make sure there's room for everybody in the picture, and everyone at the